Welcome to the Overeaters Anonymous 50th birthday party. Can you hear me back there? Okay. My name is Jessica, and I'm a compulsive overeater, and your moderator for this meeting. Will everyone who cares to please join me in the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference, so I will not mind be done. The title of this long-timer panel is We Never Graduate, a topic close to my heart. Because when I finished my first time through the 12 steps, I'm like, where's my diploma? And I was told by my sponsor that we never graduate. I'm like, well, what's the heck's the fun of that? But I've come to believe that keeping on going as we trudge this happy road of destiny is a blessing in my life. All of the panel topics this weekend are taken from For Today, the Daily Reader, first published by Overeaters Anonymous in 1982. This panel's topic comes from the July 22nd reading, and I will just read it to you. I put copies on most of the chairs. I think there are some. Repetition is the only form of permanence that nature can achieve, by George Santayana. When I tire of the sameness of the program, I wonder why there isn't some more advanced way of doing it. Now that I'm abstinent, thin, and sane, why do I have to keep going to the same meetings, hearing this, and saying the same things? Different people have different answers to such questions. Some change meetings, others turn to more challenging forms of service. What I know is this. I have a cunning, baffling, and powerful disease that can and does throw every trick at the book, in the book at me. Yes, I need to be at meetings. Yes, I need to hear newcomers. And yes, I need to keep working the program over and over again. I have read the big book and the 12 and 12 100 times, and each time the same works give me a different meaning, a new insight. For today, thank God I'm here. Pray God to keep me here. Okay. We have six speakers on this panel. And who have been abstinent and in recovery for over 150 years. Let's give them a hand. I think that's in total, because you're not that old, right, Jack? As they are sharing, we will pass an ask it basket around the room. There's little pads and pencils in there. If you have any question, write it down, and then a little later we'll collect those and ask the questions as long as we can before this is over. Our first speaker is Dodie, who will speak for 12 minutes.
I'm Dodie, a compulsive overeater. Hi. And I have been abstinent since my first meeting in Overeaters Anonymous in 1983, maintaining an 85-pound weight loss. It's great to be the first speaker because no matter what I say, it won't be repetitious. when I read this reading that this meeting is based on, I really gave it some thought, and how blessed I have been that never once in almost 27 years has it occurred to me to not come back. I mean, I think that's just a miracle. It's somehow in the core of my being, I know that this is where I belong now, and with the help of my God, I will be here until the day I die. And as I jokingly say to my husband, before they close the coffin, throw in a Snickers, you know. But interestingly, after all these years, instead of feeling like I can do less program things, I continue to feel compelled to do more, to meditate longer, to pray longer, to read more, to go to more meetings, to sponsor more people, to do more service. And I find that so interesting, you know, that I don't have that concept of, well, I'm done. I've arrived. And it is probably because I know so well to the very core of my being that I am powerless over food. And I love this where it says, I have a cunning, baffling, and powerful disease that can and does throw every trick in the book at me. And so often, I am asked about, in my area, I have way far, that's a word, way far, the longest abstinence. And so, you know, many people ask for advice, how, you know, about, I mean, here, I feel like a newbie, but in Albuquerque, New Mexico, you know, to the best of my knowledge, I have the longest abstinence in town. And so anyway, they will say to me, in fact, recently I had a newcomer after I had shared or whatever, and she came up to me and she said, "Are you telling me that you haven't had chocolate for 26 years? And I said, "Yeah, that's right." And she said, "Well, that's a miracle." And I said, "No. That's not the miracle. The miracle is not that I haven't had chocolate for 26 years. The miracle is I haven't wanted chocolate for 26 years. But going back to that one where our disease throws us every trick in the book, when people say, "Don't you ever want to eat compulsively or to have some food that, you know, I mean, to think that I will have lived and died and never tasted some of these new things on the market, you know, I mean, it's just amazing, you know, some foods that I will never, ever taste, I trust." But anyway, and you know, I would say 97% of the time, I really am not tempted to overeat. I mean, that's really a gift. But I am human. Food is wonderful. And certainly, you know, I experience the same ups and downs in life that you do, you know. I have 8 children and their spouses and partners or whatever, 15 grandkids. And someone has said, a mother is only as happy as her most unhappy child, you know. And so naturally, with being blessed with this large and wonderful family, there are many ups and downs in my life. So, and because I'm a very emotional, I mean, I eat because of my emotions. I'm an emotional eater. And I always refer people to page 23 of the 12 and 12. And there it says, "Do you ever achieve a permanent freedom from food obsession? Yes and no." And as I said, most of the time, I am free of the obsession. OA veterans do have this miraculous freedom most days, but occasionally the obsession returns. How do we get through these times without overeating? And I tell you, I cannot tell you how many times over all these years when I have the urge to eat compulsively again, I go through these 5 things. First, we don't panic. And, you know, because I so seldom have the urge to overeat, when I do feel that way, I really do panic. I mean, like, oh, my Lord, what is going on here? You know, I haven't felt like this, you know, this that I can't fill up. I haven't felt like that for so long. So I try not to panic. 2, instead, we quietly reaffirm our personal guidelines. Okay? So I go through it. I'm a 301-er. I eat 3 meals a day, nothing in between, 1 day at a time, and no personal binge food, which for me is anything sweet or anything that's salty and comes in multiple pieces. So that leaves out, yeah, as somebody said earlier in one of the other workshops, it leaves out all the EPOs, Doritos, Burritos, all of that. You know, I don't do that. Okay, and then we ask our higher power to help us continue living within them. So I don't panic. I just think about, okay, now, nope. If I eat that, it will not be a moderate meal. It'll be a huge meal. So please, God, help me not to give in to that obsessive action that I really want to take. Then we turn away from food and eating to focus our attention on our OA fellowship and the 12 steps. And so this is sort of my guide in here about how, when I really want to overeat, how I can avoid it. And I can tell you, as many times as I have used it, it has never failed me. There's another quote in the Brown Book, on page 1 of the Brown Book, where it's talking about recovery, and it says, "Can we guarantee you this recovery? The answer is simple. And I love it. If you look at our literature, it doesn't say one, period, parens, and then give it. But there are all these steps that we can follow. Like I just read to you, five things we can do if you want to eat compulsively. Don't panic, review your program, ask your higher power, that sort of thing. So here we have it. The answer is simple. If you will honestly face the truth about yourself and the illness, you know, it's a potentially terminal, fatal illness. It is chronic. I will always have it. I understand that. Two, if you will keep coming back to meetings to talk and listen to other recovering compulsive overeaters, I probably average 2.5 meetings a week. Most weeks I go to 3, some weeks I go to 2. So over the course of the month, I probably go to 2.5 meetings. My husband always says, "How was your meeting?" And I say, "Great." And he always says, "You always say that." And I say, "They always are." I have never been to a meeting where I didn't take something away. If you will read our literature and that of AA with an open mind, and I do a lot of literature reading, and the kids gave me a Kindle for Christmas, and the first thing I downloaded onto it was the big book, and it cost 99 cents. And it's too cool. I have it right up here, and I can, you know, just flip around there. So it's my, that's how I'm learning to use my Kindle, is with the big book. If you are willing to rely on a power greater than yourself, and of course, as we know, that is the basis of our problem, of our program, and that is to continue to develop this relationship, and that it will grow and grow and grow, and it will continue to grow as big as we let it. And that's the beauty of this, being a long timer. It just gets better and better and better. And if you will take the 12 steps to the best of your ability, we believe you can indeed join the ranks of those who recover. And as a sponsor, I always ask two questions of my people. What step are you working today, and what service are you doing today? And I expect a positive answer from that. So we continue to work the steps, to make them a part of our lives, to use the traditions, not just in the meetings, but in our lives. And I love this program. I have deep respect and gratitude for what it has given me, and it's really wonderful to be considered a long-timer. Thank you.
That wasn't 12 minutes, was it? Thank you, Dodi. Our next speaker is Jeannie.
Hello, Jeannie. I'm a compulsive overeater. So honored to be here. It's hard for me to believe that an eating machine like me, I have 20 and a half years absent, and I'm maintaining 120-pound weight loss. Wait a minute. It's a day at a time, by the way, anyone in here that doesn't have hope from what I just said. Everything I say today is subject to change tomorrow because, thankfully, it's a day-at-a-time program. I have 20 and a half years in OA, and I am maintaining 120-pound weight loss. It used to be 130, but I'm over 60. I'm 60 years old, and if that leaves this room, you're dead. And if I look 60, I better be asking for some money back from my doctors that keep me from looking 60. But I want to add very quickly, I have 9 years. I started my food time over on October 1st of 01, and that's because I had refined sugar, which is my red food. And I had a sponsor that gave me the direction that I must start my time over. And I don't question my sponsor. She knows more about what's good for me than I do. And anyone who does not have a sponsor in here is wasting their time. Get the sponsor. And I defied her for a couple hours. I was not going to start my time over. I was a circuit speaker. I was a water walker. I got abstinent in this area of the country. I was very popular. But I did, because if I didn't, you would not have me up here today as my speaker. I take sponsor direction. And I'm so happy that she made that 6 days very important to me. And I have not done it since. And I think twice about it. So I looked like this for 20 and a half years since I weighed 260 pounds. I wore a size 24. My closet went from a 4 to a size 24. I gained and lost 700 pounds before I came to OA. I had a very lucrative career. I had a blank checkbook. I wrote checks to doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs, psychiatrists, nutritionists, fat farms, cosmetic surgeons. I've had body parts cut off of me that I missed today. I'm sorry I did it. And I also have artificial implants. I mean, they're not where women traditionally get artificial implants. If you want to know about it, I'll tell you after the meeting where they are. But I wrote checks. I went all over the world. I tried things that's not even approved by the FDA here yet. It probably never will be. I'll probably accelerate my death, as a matter of fact, by doing that. But gained and lost 700 pounds, and I was either a 260-pound, poison-spewing, self-hating witch slithering around the world looking for a fight, or I was 118-pound, poison-spewing witch slithering around the world looking for a fight. Because there's one thing worse than a compulsive overeater's binging. It's a compulsive overeater not binging and with no program. I mean, just hide the weapons. I had guns, knives, you name it. I was the pioneer of road rage because I was on a diet one year. I was white knuckling my meals. I mean, I used to chase guys out in South Central L.A. and win. I'd win the road rage contest. There's a language that you kind of sort of give a sign where the other person relinquishes the victory. And I would be in a size 4 white bikini in the Will Rogers Beach in July. And by the following December, I'd be in a size 20 black velvet muumuu because I just gained about 100 pounds. And, you know, all over the world writing checks to all these professionals, which, by the way, they've done a wonderful job. There's a place in the world for these professions, but they never touched my disease of compulsive overeating. Because you know why, ladies and gentlemen? I was working on the wrong body part. I was working on my stomach and my taste buds. And the disease is born in my mind, and it still lives there today, and it's worse today than it ever was before. And I must be very cautious about it every day. I must be careful with how I think and how I feel, because this is a threefold disease. I have a nutritionist. I had a nutritionist on the payroll, private trainer, cosmetic surgeon, cook, and I still couldn't stay skinny because I never changed my insides. This is the only place in the world where the insides I have to change, and I must start there. I eat more today than I at this weight than I ever did when I weighed 260 pounds. I am out of prison. I've traveled to foreign countries. I've traveled all over the world to eat like cats, monkeys, whatever, and I stayed abstinent. And that's because I continue is the operative word. Because if I just stopped eating and when I got skinny and left OA, I did not address the other two parts of this program, which are actually more important than not eating to a person like me. I get up every morning and I make a conscious decision that I must recalibrate my perception meter. My perception meter is distorted and it's very bizarre. I'm self-centered, I'm very selfish, I'm very vain, I'm very impatient, and I make a mountain out of a molehill. And I dismiss the mountains that I should address. You know, you've heard the story. It's in our literature. When I broke a nail, I used to call it suicide prevention. You know, now I just go to a nail salon. And you know, when I wrecked the car, I just let it sit by the side of the road for weeks. I mean, it's just totally bizarre perception, self-centeredness. And, you know, I don't fear compulsively overeating because I haven't done it since October 1st of 01. But I do fear it to, like, murdering people, you know, plotting their murder, running them off the road, you know, screaming at defenseless creatures such as salespersons and waiters, you know. And because why? I'm mentally ill and I have an emotional disorder. And if I don't watch those two, then I will compulsively overeat. When I'm overeating, it's not the first stage of a slip. It's the last stage of a slip. What was I not doing? So I must continue. A person like me, I'm not afraid of dying from compulsive overeating. That would be welcome. What I'm afraid of is going back out there and living in it at 260, and I can't kill myself. I don't have the guts to do it. So I fear, I don't really fear, but I'm ever vigilant about continuing a daily routine every day. Not that I won't eat. That's the last thing I think about. Although I do make my food plan. But I don't like white knuckle it when I was 118 or 260. Like, when's the next meal? When's the next meal? When's the next meal? But I must every day do a routine to line up my thinking and also to line up my feelings. My feelings and my thinking drive me to the food. And I don't do it perfectly. I've had some weight-gaining meals. I was up 10 pounds more than I am now. I've been lower than 20 pounds, but it is postmenopause. I cut myself a little slack. And I also have you people around to give me a moderate body distortion check. You know, I almost didn't come here. I currently live in Northern Michigan because I thought I was too fat to show up and, like, carry the message. See how sick I am after 20 and a half years? It's a perception disease. So my routine is this, and I do this daily, by the way, and I have a sponsor. I'm just saying, change sponsors. I miss my old sponsor, but my new sponsor has yet to realize how gifted I really am, but I'll get her educated. and humble. I'll get her educated very quickly. My routine is, I say the third step and the seventh step every morning as soon as my eyes pop open. Because when my eyes pop open, I think I'm worthless, no good, I'll never be any good. There's four horsemen at the bottom of my bed. You're worthless, you're fat, and you're no good. And then I slip off the bed and I say the first three steps. Then I read one book only, one, whatever that is. And then I call my sponsor twice a week. And then I have sponsees call me. I pray before and after every meal. They're very quick prayers. My meals are like my daily program. It's like the Olympics. They have an opening ceremony and a closing ceremony. You know what they say? The miracle is not that we eat three times a day. The miracle is that we stop eating three times a day. That's my story. You know, I came from like eating on the toilet and reaching out of the shower to actually stopping after each meal. And then I go to 2 to 3 OA meetings a week because they're very scarce where I am. I actually had to start 2 meetings because, you know, it's either take the action, get busy living or get busy dying. And then I close the night with writing a 10th step generally. And I'm never not without, and you think that takes a lot of time. I used to sit for 6-8 hours watching television, clicking the channels and binging. I have such a huge life right now. It's 10 degrees. It can be 10 degrees where I live and 100 inches of snow. I love it. I'm out there in my little snow bunny outfit. It looks like I'm going to ask, but I'm just actually walking the dog. But, you know, I have to look, you know, very glamorous on this 100 inches of snow, playing in these little ski suits that I could only fantasize about ever wearing. But besides being healthy body weight and not being a circus freak around the streets of L.A. especially, or where I currently live, it's the fact that I have inner peace most of the time. I'm serene, and like Dodie said, I don't even think about 99% of the time, I do not think about compulsively overeating. And that is a person who used to cry when you even told me that I had to go on a diet. I'm a professional dieter. I know how to lose. OA is the only place in the world that has kept me healthy body weight, and I want to be healthy body weight. I don't have a desire to like wait till this is over and I get to eat something today. I actually have fun at functions now. I actually forget what they serve. I used to just remember events by what the hell the food was served that night. You know, I used to remember weddings 20 years ago, not by the event, but what the heck they served that night. And that was my life because I did not, as somebody said here earlier today, Susan said at the luncheon speaker, I stopped emotionally maturing when I picked up my first compulsive bite. I mean, I am 60 years old, but sometimes I have the emotions and the perceptions of a 10-year-old petulant child. I can be very impatient, very rageful. My tongue should be registered at the police department as a weapon because I'm not prone to physical violence, but I am a verbal rager. I've been known to, like, murder people with my tongue. It's awful. That's a disease, and it's never going to go away. And I must be very aware and vigilant of that. So continue, to me, is the operative word. And like Dodie said, I want to continue. I don't have any desire to ever graduate. Graduate, the minute I stop growing, somebody said I'm either moving forward or moving backward. The minute I stop and I'm treading water, I am now starting to dig my own grave because my mind will start working on me. Then my feelings cave in, and then that first compulsive bite, and you know how it's like putting gas on a campfire if I have my red foods or if I just go to that first compulsive bite. And then that is what drives me to eat, not my stomach. Where I come from, a bariatric surgery is epidemic. They're shooting them out like slot machines back there in northern Michigan because insurance covers them. Well, eventually, I don't have an opinion on that. I just want to tell you my experience at those meetings. Those people end up back at OA because the doctor just said it, this eloquent doctor. I worked on your stomach, not your mind. And thank God I didn't try. Thank God bariatric surgery was not around when I got abstinent in 89. I'd have had all those surgeries. I'd have had every damn one of them. I've known 2 people who died from that surgery. But as I said, I don't have an opinion on it. But I can tell you my personal experience about it. And you know what? I watch television. I still see what's out there. That to be skinny, to get skinny. I'm a professional, get skinnier. My break switch is broken, though. I never could stay thin because the rewards of being thin weren't there. Because I didn't have the 12 steps. I used to stand in front of the refrigerator and look for the answer to my life. Now it's here. It's with all of you around the world. I made so many friends this weekend. I saw wonderful people that have influenced me so much. And it's a day at a time. I want to continue. 100 inches of snow, size 8, or Hawaii palm trees, size 8, OA. I take OA with me everywhere. Every day is a new ball game for me. I fill that bucket up every morning because at the end of the night that bucket has a hole in it and sent it. I have to refill it every day. And that's the thrill of it. That's the thrill of it for me. I get to have a 12-step day wherever I am in the world. I'm not afraid to go anywhere now. And I'm freer today, and I eat more today, as I said, than I did when I weighed 260. So continue is the operative word. I love my life in OA. When OA becomes more fun than binging alone and clicking the channels on a Saturday night, I'll be doing that. But after the previous 20 and a half years, this is where the action is for me, and I hope it is for you, too. Thanks.
Thank you. I see people sitting on the floor back there. If you're sitting and there's an empty chair next to you, would you raise your hand? Some of you people want to move forward into an actual chair. These hands are in the air. Come up. I'm sure we're breaking some kind of fire law around here. Okay, our next speaker is Hannah.
I'm Hannah, a compulsive overeater. And I've been accused before of not speaking into the mic, so can you hear me? Good. And I love this. Repetition is the only form of permanence that nature can achieve. And it's really true. Before program, I never did anything for any length of time. And all of the previous speakers talked about the dieting and the yo-yo dieting, and that's what I was doing. And I could never figure out why diets didn't work. And I always thought that once I was thin, you know, I was really going to be wonderful, and you were going to be wonderful, but you didn't change. And because you didn't change, my husband especially, he was the closest to me, you know, I had no choice because the only thing that made me feel good was food. And in this program, the only problem I have here is where it says sanity, sane. I'm not quite there yet, and I hope I never will be. And, you know, I really enjoy my kind of insane behavior at times because I never allowed myself to do that and be that when I was binging and when I was into my disease. And this disease tells me it's not a disease. That's why I have to remember it's a disease. But, you know, I controlled the whole world, and my poor husband, I don't know how he put up with me, and he found his program before I did, and I was very grateful he had a good sponsor. Otherwise, I would have been out the door. And that poor guy had to fight for his rights because I was so controlling. I knew subconsciously that I couldn't control myself, so I tried to control you. And I'm very grateful that this program, that I found this program, and that I actually stayed with something, because I'm not the person who stays anywhere. I've never done anything for any length of time in my life except my marriage, which almost didn't make it. But this, I don't know what it was. I came to program in 1977 in the fall. And I started abstaining on January 6, 1978, so that makes you, if you add it up, it's 32 years, and it's almost half my life, because I'm only 39, but my calendar says 70. And but I'm having the time of my life. And, you know, I was told once that to get to be an old-timer, I know we call it long-timer now, if you don't binge and you don't die, you get to be an old-timer. And I don't really have any ideas and no qualms about wanting to be, you know, an old-timer. I want to be an old-timer. I don't want to die and I don't want to binge because my life is wonderful. Now, I had a tragedy in my program. My husband died about 13 years ago, and my life fell apart. And I didn't really want to be here, and I didn't want to go to meetings. But if you have any length of time in program, your friends don't leave you alone. And that's why it's so important to stay close to the program. They would call me up and drag me to a meeting, or they would come and get me to a meeting until I kind of felt like I was part of again, because I just all of a sudden felt I wasn't part of anything. But the program never left me. I never binged or anything. I just didn't want to be there anymore. But, you know, today I was told by someone, I didn't believe it at the time, there is a reason for everything. And today I know there is. Of course, I miss my husband terribly, and somebody said that in a workshop, you know, who lost a husband. But someone said to me, maybe he did everything he was supposed to in this lifetime, and maybe there's a reason why you're here, and there are things that you can do and have to do. And the things that I had to do that I felt I had to do was get more involved. Like give service, to me, that has been the greatest thing in my life. They roped me in to do a convention as a chair in 2003, and I had no idea what I was doing, and it was the most wonderful experience of my life. Of course, once they get to know you, you know, then all of a sudden you're in for it. And I've been giving service ever since, which just stopped with Region 2 after 5 years, but then, well, service kind of got me. And it's been a wonderful, wonderful time in OA, and it's changed. When I came to OA, I had absolutely no idea that this was not just a program where I have to lose weight, that there's something else to it. And that was the missing link, because I never knew that. And, you know, I have absolutely no problem with the second half of the first step. I knew the first one, I accepted that right away, but the second half, my life was not unmanageable. It took a while for me to realize that it wasn't, and that was the greatest thing I've ever learned in my life. And today I know, that it's not manageable, but I can manage one day at a time. And I have to start my day off right. Like, you know, I started out, and I'm one of those, I need a lot of help, so I need to light a candle, so that reminds me that I have to, you know, say certain steps and meditate for a while. And I do that every day, and I turn my life and my will over to a higher power, which I never knew existed because I was it. And today I do that every day, If I forget to do that because I'm traveling, and say, you know, one of our panel speakers, she has traveled all over the world, and I do too, but it doesn't take long before I remember that I forgot something, and I need to do that. And traveling sometimes, you know, you deal with foods. I'm also vegetarian. That are always, you know, not all that easy to come by. But I have made it, you know, throughout the world. And meetings are everywhere, except in places like Tibet. They don't have anything to eat, so they don't need our program. But, you know, there are countries where they fight every day to get something to eat. But as soon as they're better off, you know, they get to be like us, because compulsive overeaters, the disease of compulsive overeating, in my opinion, is in the genes. I have lived longer at 70 than any other female of the previous generation. And it's because of compulsive overeating, heart attack. And I even, my weight was close to 200 pounds. My husband and I kind of argued I wouldn't admit to 200, so I admitted to 185. But I was still the thinnest one in my family until I came to this program. And food was such a reward, and today I know it's a killer. My husband actually, after I'd been in program for a while, gave me something to put on a keychain that said chocoholic, because that was me. And I still have the darn thing, because I know, you know, that's what I was. And anything that sets me off today, I try to stay away from, because I can't handle it. You know, there's just one. I was so crazy when my husband, you know, had his stash, and I would not forbid him to have it, and he would put it in the refrigerator, and I always knew things were there. Now, ask me, you know, other stuff, healthy stuff that was in there, I would have no idea. And I told him to cover it up, and when he would go to one of his meetings, you know, I would sit there and I wonder, and maybe I could have just one. And it got to the point where I ate it down to a certain level. Oh, my God, I had to run to the store, buy some more, get it to a certain level. And then when the garage door hummed and he came home, I sat there as if nothing happened. Or making my own candy from grandmother, because I wouldn't have anything in the house. You know, making it like grandmother's recipe. And then I was afraid my husband might come home. And then so I had to run the air conditioning in the wintertime when it was cold, because you have to get rid of the smell. And then when the garage door hums, you know, I had to sit there. Now, if that is not insanity, I don't know what is. And I'm glad that I still have a little bit of that insanity, because it keeps, the insanity actually keeps me sane. You know, the second half of the first step, something that I never, ever admitted in my life, and today I know it's true. And giving service has been such a wonderful experience. And, you know, several of us talked about it. Every once in a while, insanity strikes. And maybe, you know, it's not the big stuff, like my husband's death, that made me want to binge. But, you know, the broken nail and all that stuff. And today I laugh about it, but I immediately pick up the phone and tell somebody about it. You know, it takes the power out of it. But I could never say anything like that before I came to program. And I know that I call it my apprenticeship, the first 5 years of my program, because I had to learn all these things. I thought, do they read the damn steps and the damn traditions? Today I love the damn steps and the damn traditions. And, you know, because I need to be reminded and I need to listen all the time. But I was so smart when I came. And today I know I'm not that smart, but it's good enough. I know enough. I know what I have to know in order to work this program one day at a time. And I'm having a wonderful time. I mean, I just love, you know, I'm trying to work my OA commitments in between trips, or trips in between OA meetings, because or commitments, because I just love to go see the world. And I was terrified of people when I came. I was afraid to talk to you, so what did I do? I stuck my nose up in the air. That way you thought I was kind of uppity and I didn't have to talk to you. Today I go all by myself to the other end of the world, and I'd love to meet new people. I mean, what a change, and it's all due to this program. And, you know, without this program, I could have missed it all, so I'm super grateful that I'm here today, and thank you for asking me to participate.
We still have some empty chairs up here in the front for you people in the back. Raise your hand if you're next to a seat that's open. And I forgot to remind you about 25 minutes ago to turn off your cell phone. Our next speaker is Jack.
I'm Jack, a compulsive overeater and the distinguished representative from the glorious state of testosterone. One out of every six women, or one out of every six people on this panel are female. Write that down. I've been in the program for 28 years this last week, and I don't really, like was said by the first speaker, she said she never wanted to not be here. I never wanted to not be here. There was never a time I didn't want to be here. Now, what I'm tempted to and have joked about is that there weren't a lot of other places I could go back to. There were a lot of places I wasn't particularly well received. And quite, I had burned some bridges in my eating and drinking days, and my top weight is 300, and I lost 100 pounds twice I like doing it so much this, the first time that I gained it all back to see how much fun I could have the second time. And the second time didn't work as well because I wound up having to add alcohol and Valium to kill the pain that I was eating over. So if you're new, I don't harbor the illusion that there is an end to this process. And I have not had to work real hard to read in the big book the places that remind me that it is a disease that doesn't go away. And I quit the debating society per the suggestion of the literature about wanting to argue. Because there's people out there in the world who want to argue with whether it's a disease or not. They want to argue whether recovering or recovered. And I don't have the energy or the time, because what I'm here to say and what I'll tell them is my experience is that I see it as a disease, and if they want to mess around, I get to play with things like dis-ease. If somebody has ease, they don't weigh 300 pounds at 18 years old. They don't lose it and gain it all back. They don't go on some of the diets that I was on early on, the diet pills. And by the way, the great pride I had was that I could lose 30 pounds in a month anytime I started a new diet. And it never occurred to me that if you get fat enough, losing 30 pounds in a month isn't that tough. I mean, it's just not that tough. So what's changed over 28 years is that I've had to do more of late. I've had the same sponsor for 15 years, and I'm probably doing more now than I did for a long time before the recent now. And why? It's because I had to. I found out I was about a day away from being threatened that if I didn't do more, there would be consequences. I don't like consequences. But it hit me about a day before it hit my sponsor that what I was doing was keeping me down 120 and sometimes probably 110. I don't weigh myself sometimes once a year at my physical. When I came in the program, I was weighing myself 10, 12, 15 times a day. Fat or thin, it didn't matter. And I'm serious. I mean, it's only one of us who can go through the litany with me, but it's when you first wake up in the morning, and then after the first pee, watch the head. It's like a bobblehead doll convention. It's like being at Dodger Stadium on Manny night. You know, all the heads go like this. It was before the first pee. It was after the first pee. It was after the shower, before the shower, after breakfast, before breakfast, after the dump, before the dump. Is the dump better than the number one? Is the number one? It's holding the towel rack. When need be, it's pushing up on the towel rack. It's 1 foot. It's 2 feet. You gotta laugh. But it's, when I was doing it, it didn't seem particularly funny. It seemed like that's life. That's just the way it is. And since I've been in program, what I found out is that the construct in which I lived was true as I experienced it and true as I was taught it, but had no correlation with objective reality at all. My dad's an accountant, and every now and again, I am an adult child of a Jewish accountant, and it's not my fault, it's a disease. But I have joked with my dad as recently as last week. I don't dance with him about it anymore. I told him that I'm using it now in my share, but that he will have said to me probably 50 times in my first 5 or 10 years, "So on January 5th, 1982, you couldn't stop overeating." "Yes, Dad." "And on January 6th, 1982, after a meeting and a night's sleep, you woke up the next morning and you could stop compulsively overeating." "Yes, Dad." And he looks at me like, "It doesn't make sense. It's not bottom line. There's no science to this." And I say, "I absolutely agree. I'm just telling you my experience." That night that I went to Beverly Hills High School in 82, I didn't know it was my last night, because I had started every Monday, probably when I was 8 years old until January 5th, 1982, every first of the month, every first of the year. Anybody who gets abstinent in like October, November, or December, my hat is off to you. But I was the first week of January, then all the good holidays are over until Valentine's Day. But, you know, I'm not giving up Thanksgiving, and I'm Jewish, I'm not giving up Christmas, I'm not giving up Hanukkah. That's 8 nights not to have to give up. I'm not giving up Halloween, the holy night of, you know, Halloween, that's like the national holiday. I mean, New Year's Eve, but they're like the 5th, the 6th, my birthday's in January, big surprise, you know, another New Year's resolution. So my hat's off to those who didn't do it. But what I realized is that That night that I left Beverly Hills High School, I left with the best of intentions. Now, if any of you know L.A., there's not a lot to do between Beverly Hills High School and the intersection of Wilshire and Lincoln on a Monday night at 9 o'clock. I found, I think it was 10, it could have been 8, it could have been 12 stops, and one item each, swearing that this is the last item. This is the last item. And then, but when I woke up, I think something hit me. And the last 28 years, and God willing, the next, 56 will be about how to live with this reality. That I woke up feeling exactly the way I had woken up many, many, many mornings before. I had food in my teeth. I was dressed. I was in my Naga hide. I still think that's so funny. What kind of animal does a Naga hide cover? A Naga. I was leaning back in my Naga skin chair, and the TV was on. The phone was unplugged in those days in the early 80s, and that was the way you were allowed to binge and not be bothered, is that, and they would get a ring through, so they thought you weren't home. You didn't have to put up with their invasion in your space. And then eating was, me, and then the complaints of being single and alone and having a miserable, woeful plight in my, 10 by 15 square foot apartment in its entirety and in Palms. So I made my 10 stops. And I woke up that next morning exactly the same way as all the others, but something had happened. I don't know what. I'm talking about it until I stop talking about it. I wear a dreidel, and you know what? For those who've heard it in the last 5 years, sorry. As my sponsor would say, you don't like it, don't tell me, tell your sponsor. And I wear a dreidel because the four sides of the dreidel, at least the ones made in Israel, say Nesta Dol Hayapa, which is Hebrew words for the great miracle happened here. And to me, what happened on that January 5th into January 6th is a nes gadol. It's a big miracle. I'm not particularly Hopi in the scheme of the people in recovery in my life. I'm not particularly spiritual. But you know what? I don't harbor the illusion that there's any other way to do it on a daily basis but exactly the way I heard to do it on January 5th, 1982. And I hear every day since. I read every day since. Here at meetings every day since. I've had the good fortune of having a sponsor who's reminded me every day ever since. Before that, a different sponsor who reminded me. This is what I have to do. I have to get right by God, align up my spiritual existence to the best of my ability. I've got to work the 12 steps to the best of my ability. I've got to not eat. I'm a 3-0, and I don't know the acronym, but I eat 3 meals a day, nothing in between. I don't know why. I eat no sugar. I haven't wanted to. I don't want to. And people will ask, how can you not eat that stuff? I like the way it feels not doing that. And so now what I have graduated from is harboring the illusion that another diet, another Monday, another fad, another gimmick will do anything. I when those things come on the TV at night, I just pick up the sports page and I ignore them. I'm not even on the corner of my ear. So what I know it's about is turning my life and my will over to the care of God as I understand God to the best of my ability. I love the tool of sponsorship. I learn from both ends. I learn from my sponsor, and I learn from the people I sponsor. And it is as big a gift to have guys I sponsor as it is to have the good fortune of having the guy who sponsors me for all these years. Because I get to talk about recovery and talk about program and be with Lunsman, another Jew. In case you haven't noticed, I'm Jewish. There's a Yiddish word. Lunsman. It's Yiddish. It means basically people of the same land. It means part of the community, another person in the community. And what I get from y'all, and if I say y'all, I mean that literally. I let a retreat in Lumberton, Mississippi, thinking I'm so different. And I walked in there, and for 3 days, all I heard was the same exact, they talked a little slower than I do, but it was the exact same recovery program. So if you're new, the only thing I've done right, and again, I take no credit for this, because I haven't wanted to go anywhere else, is I keep coming back. I pray. I sometimes meditate. I talk to my sponsor very regularly now. Historically, not as regularly. But I know that it's in the steps, it's in the traditions, and it's in my relationship with my higher power. And when I want to talk about the food, either my sponsor will remind me or I will remind me that if I'm talking about the food, I'm missing the point. If I'm talking about the food, it's because I don't want to deal with what the real issues are. And the real issues are my spiritual existence, my working of the steps, and that. So if you're new, just keep coming back. Do it poorly. Do it well. Do it sincerely. Do it insincerely. Do it honestly. Do it less honestly. You can do whatever the hell you do, but keep coming back. That, to me, has been the solution to the solution, the illumination of what it takes to stay in recovery one day at a time, God willing, for the rest of my life. Thanks.
Our next speaker is Julie.
You have no idea what it's like up here. All these people. Yeah, it's like, oh my God, am I ever going to get this over with? So, on that happy note, my name is Julie. I'm a compulsive overeater. Because, I mean, I buy every one of their CDs, so it's, you know, kind of scary. But, you know, bottom line is this. There's a lot of people in this room who saved my life. They've done more than that. I don't know how to say it. The best way I can say it is what my sponsor told me that her sponsor told her, which goes out to this entire room and especially to people who know who I'm talking about. I'm not going to name names because I don't want to embarrass them. But in that you sponsored her and that's as good as she is that she was, my sponsor told, anyway, said, don't thank me for what I'm doing with you. You can never thank me enough. But go out and do this for somebody else. So that's what I try and do. And I like to shoot where the ducks fly. Compulsive overeaters, it's good to find them in OA meetings. I find that really the most successful way to encounter them. I have pulled over on the side of the road and thrown OA literature at somebody. I'm not joking. I have walked up to strangers on a junior college campus and said, here. They say, you know, if you can't be a good example, at least be a horrible warning. And I think that's what I am up here on this panel. I was in the sponsorship workshop earlier, and I wanted to raise my hand and go, have any of you ever gotten hate letters? I have. 3 of them. I have pictures here because my sponsor told me never to go anywhere without your pictures. Because it's really hard to believe, you know, when you see people who look, well, so you see their eyes. You can't see our eyes from that distance. But if you look in our eyes, you know we belong here. But from a body standpoint, you just think, oh, they didn't look normal. But pictures prove I'm not. So I like this reading because it says, I encountered this. When I tire of the sameness of the program, turn to the person next to you and say, do you have the same thing for breakfast? Most of the time. Most people I know in this program do. I mean, I eat, you know, 8 ounces of non-fat yogurt with a tablespoon of oat bran and an apple for like 5 years. So it cracks me up when we concern ourselves with sameness. You know, I never tired of Doritos and Reese's peanut butter cups as a good study tool. I never tired of all my Ben Truths. Never said, oh, this again? No. So it's like, and yet I come into program where you can help me and I go, oh, it's her talking again? I mean, it's like, hello, you have the capacity to stand it, trust me. So it says in here, I wonder if there isn't some more advanced way of doing it. It's like the most advanced we get in here is abstinent. That's it. That's the Olympic gold medal. That's what we're all shooting for. And to be honest with you, when I would sit out there and resent people up here or think they were like, you know, down from Mount Olympus and I'm never going to make it and all that other stuff, I have to tell you that we're all on a level playing field in case you don't know it, for those of you who are new. That it really doesn't matter. What matters is today. I have chucked a year and a half of abstinence in a day. And then I went out and binged for 2.5 years and put on 100 pounds in less than 3 months in a day. I did that in an OA retreat. made the other retreat and slightly nervous. But so here's the cliff notes, okay? The cliff notes are these. I came in about 28 years ago, as our previous speaker said. I love it on a Monday in January. When else do you start? And I only came in here because I couldn't think of anything else to try. I had tried dysentery. I had tried chick, electroshock my arm, try and convince me I don't like chocolate. I had tried a couple of commercial weight loss programs numerous times. And frankly, I yo-yoed, and I know a guy in this program who says, I just yo-ed. And that was me, you know. I didn't yo-yo, I yo-ed. And so anyway, the cliff notes are that I came in this program about 28 years ago. I got down to 98 pounds thinking that if I could just get thin enough, I would feel like persons who work the steps felt. I mean, I had the big book, and it was in English, but I couldn't make heads or tails of it. It was about a bunch of drunks anyway. So I'll just keep weighing and measuring my food and getting thinner and thinner until at some point I either die or, you know, I get better. I don't know what I was thinking. I wasn't thinking. And I didn't trust God, and I hadn't cleaned house. So I had no effective mental defense against that first compulsive bite. I took it in an OA retreat, and within 3 months I had put on 100 pounds. I'd gone from 98 to 200. During the months down here of June, July, and August, and you guys know what that's like, okay? So for the next 2.5 years, I kept coming back to meetings, trying to get abstinent, and I could not. I probably had enough 30-day chips to circle this room, and it was really horrible. I am one of those people that ate out of the garbage can. I am one of those people that would have a food and then hide it in a more nondescript wrapper and put it in the trash. I am one of those people who... whose garbage disposal was in pristine condition because we never used it. We didn't, what, throw it away? What, lettuce maybe, but that's it. So after 2.5 years, as it's been also described in here, how can you describe a miracle? I don't know. I never left because I knew this was the answer. I believed you. I saw people abstaining, and I believed it could work. It had worked for me once. I didn't know where else to go, bottom line. And so I kept coming back, and I got a sponsor who was a friend of my then boyfriend, now husband's, and she scared me. She was 4'11", but she scared me. And I did everything she said because I didn't know what else to do. And because I did everything she said, it saved my life. And I did not rocket to stardom in the Overeaters Anonymous program. I did not smell good in the Overeaters Anonymous program. I was not a nice person in the Overeaters Anonymous program. In fact, if you sat next to me in a meeting, chances are you would have gotten up and moved over just a couple feet. And today I still always get nervous when there's an empty seat next to me because I think, will anybody sit by me? Sometimes they do. Your sponsees will because they're afraid if they don't. But anyway, so when it says, you know, now that I'm abstinent, thin, and sane, this cracks me up. sane soundness of mind, as in the kind of sanity I believe they're talking about that keeps me from putting my hand on a hot stove, kind of sanity. You know, I've been walking in the streets of San Francisco, picked up a Butterfinger bar, the ones that are this size, and it was completely unopened and looked in pristine condition to me. I took it home. Now, I'm not going to eat it, but I can't leave it there. And I said to my husband, would you like a Butterfinger bar? And he goes, why? And I go, well, I found this one on the way to work. On the ground? Yes. Throw it away. And I'm like, how can you say that? Sanity. Okay? So I'm shooting for 2 out of 3. Okay? Why do I have to keep going to the same meetings, hearing, and saying the same things? Because if I don't, I'm going to die. That's why. You know, you don't hear people going, oh, the same chemotherapy, week after week, you know. I mean, come on. All right. Now, it also says in here that different people have different answers to that question. Change meetings, more challenging service. I, for the most part of my recovery in this program, and I'm maintaining about a 70-pound weight loss now for about, I've been staying for a little over 24 years, and about 70-pound weight loss, you know, okay? And that is, as we all know, when you realize after a while when you've been abstaining, or I realize that
to take credit for any of this is just nuts. It's like, I did the footwork, but I know I couldn't make things like this happen. I'm coming out of the kitchen with a lunch I know I shouldn't be eating. It's skirting the edges of thin ice, and there's no breeze in the room, and from the top of my refrigerator floats down a piece of paper and lands directly on my plate, and it says, dignity of choice. Try and manufacture things like that, okay? So, and now I've lost my place. Where was I? Oh, yeah. Okay, anyway, dignity of choice. So I hit a point about a year ago where I normally came to meetings because I'm desperate and or pissed off, or both. And then I came to meetings because I like the way I feel. And I started feeling like, is this it? And I knew I was in trouble. And I wait till I'm in trouble. And then I call my sponsor. And I call her other times, but mostly when I'm in trouble. So she just said, to be truthful, I can't remember what she said. But all I know is that I kept coming back anyway. So I'm bored. I know what it is. Somebody I really love said that if somebody asked him why he went to meetings, he used to say, to get my gas tank filled, you know, fill up spiritually and, you know, be part of fellowship and, you know. He said, but that's not true. He says, if I told you the truth, it would sound grandiose. But the truth is that I come to meetings to save lives. Nobody could reach me till I came here. And if you're abstaining and you don't show up, then I don't know it's possible. Okay? And the book says it over and over and over again that nothing will so sure immunity from a return to compulsive overeating as intensive work with other compulsive overeaters. I need newcomers. I don't sponsor because I'm a good Girl Scout. People I sponsor know this. I sponsor because they're saving my life. I get up here because this is a scary thing to do. But the hope is I can tell the truth and get my ego out of the way enough to know, thank you, that it just don't matter. I just don't eat today. Thank you.
I think we have one more Ask It basket. If you could pass that forward, please. And our final speaker today is Phyllis, and then we're going to have a little Q&A until a little bit before 5:15, and then we'll say a prayer.
Phyllis, you're a chunky, drunky, junkie. Are we lucky people? You know, are we lucky? Years ago, I would hide from other people, and I would not ever want to get dressed to go to a place where there are going to be a lot of people. I would lie to my family. I would tell them I'm sick, I can't go, because I have nothing to wear. And I vowed to myself, I am going to get out of this one way or another. The quote here by Santa Ana, I said, I always say that. How come they wrote his name underneath that instead of mine? When I went to school, every day, 2 times 2 equals 4. And over and over and over again, we had to do the multiplication table. And we did the same thing with all the letters that we had to learn and all of the facts. And I come into this program and somebody says, well, why do you keep going back? I said, because I got to learn my numbers. You know, I have to learn my letters. I have to learn my numbers. I have been clean, abstinent, and sober since May 20th, 1972. Thank you, God. I'm looking forward to not this year coming up, but the next year, because then I'm going to be abstinent for half my life. I'm going to be 79 years old. Nobody in my family has lived that long. No one. because they had heart disease, they had high blood pressure, and they ate like Jewish fools. Chicken fat. My obsession is not gone, but the compulsion to act on my obsession is gone. I can be in a restaurant, my friends know this, and I can see a waiter go by with a tray full of stuff, and I watch to see where it's going. I don't have to order it, and I don't even have to eat it, and I don't have to taste it. It's gone. My compulsion to act on my disease is gone, because I do believe that it is a disease. It makes it so much easier to have been able to accept when I first came here that I had a disease and that it wasn't my fault. Because I was brought up in a home where I was fat, ugly, lazy, and stupid. So if I had a sickness, it was my fault. If World War III was going to start when I was growing up, that would be my fault. Children were starving in Europe. That was my fault, because I ate too much. And I did not know until I came to the program that I was eating not because I liked the taste of the food, which is what I thought, but because I had, I had problems that I didn't want to face. I said, I don't have any problems. You know, I'm doing everything I want to do, and everybody is doing everything I want them to do. So then why were things so terrible? Why did I weigh so much? Why did I do drugs? Why did I do alcohol? Something was wrong. I remember coming home early in my first marriage. I had just come from the doctor's, and I said, I weighed 205 pounds. And my husband said, when you hit 210, sell. But I'm a big girl, I can carry it, right? I'm tall, and I always had this feeling that nobody really knew how much I weighed because I wore a black raincoat. It was a size 26 raincoat, but that's what I did. I covered it up. I thought I covered it up. I would comb my hair and put on my face and try to squeeze into something to go out into the world with. One of the things that I learned, that I thought was funny when people would talk about weighing, I would take off my perfume, my earrings, and my eyelashes. Got to be clean. You know, it's amazing because I'm sitting here, and as the last speaker, I'm saying to myself, what am I going to say that has not been already said, or for you not to recognize the passion that I have about this program, because we all have the passion about the program. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be here. And you wouldn't be here in the audience if you didn't believe that you could have that passion. And when I chose to do things in my other life, pre-OA, I always made the wrong choice. Wasn't that interesting? I was impulsive, compulsive, and repulsive. You know, I would make decisions based on the way the wind was blowing. I really didn't think things out. So when I came in the program and they told me I had some work to do, and I said, okay, I'll give you 30 days. If at the end of 30 days it doesn't work, you can have your books back. And they said, you can have your fat and your misery back. And of all the people that were in the room, and there weren't a lot of people, but all the people that were there, I chose the most unlikely person for me. And God must have known what was going on there, because she was noisy, she was boisterous, she had flaming red hair, and she was fat. But she was getting thin. I saw it happen. And I came to my first meetings because the man I was dating was going to meetings, and I didn't want all those ladies to hug him up, you know. So I wanted to see what was going on. So I went to the meetings, and for a couple of months I sat in the back of the room and said, they got to be kidding. They can't really mean this. They are terribly loosely wrapped. You know, real people don't do that. And then finally, one day, one woman came over to me and said, you always sit in the back of the room and blah, 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 blah. And I burst into tears. It's the first time anybody ever showed any interest in what I was doing. And the whole story came out, and she helped me, and several others did, with drugs, because there wasn't any place for me to go except to a hospital, and I didn't want to go there. And then I started going to AA meetings because I didn't want to go to the place to get fixed up. And at the end of 30 days, I had given up the drugs, and it was the first time in my life that I had ever lost weight without chemicals. It was always better living through chemicals. If one was good, two were better. And I said, well, I'll give him another month, you know, another 30 days, very gratuitous of me. And it's turned into my 38th year. And I keep coming back because I don't want to forget. I want to keep fresh in my mind the desperation that I felt the first meeting I went to, when I felt hopeless, and the sponsor said, hopeless maybe, but helpless no. You're not helpless. You can do something about this. So I said, I've been trying for 40 years to do this, and I haven't been successful. She said, you do what I say. And I said, yes, ma'am. And you know what? I did exactly what she said. She said, you will call me every day? I said, yes, ma'am. She said, you will write down your food every day? Yes, ma'am. You will not eat certain foods? And at that time, it wasn't too hard. There was only a gray sheet around, so I did that. And you will call three other people, and you will go to four meetings a week, at least four meetings a week. And I said, yes, I will do that. Because if I'm going to prove that you're wrong, I have to do everything that you tell me to do. Well, she wasn't wrong. They weren't wrong. I'm not wrong. The person that stands here today is someone who likes and respects herself. I care about where I go, what I do, and what I say. I do not put myself in the company of people who give me problems in here, who get my negative juices going. I don't need to do that anymore. I'm old enough. I earned the right. I do not go to places where I know that the food is not going to be good for me. I don't go to bars. And I read, I write, I start my day every day with the first three steps before I get out of bed, because that 85-pound weight loss is waiting right at the foot of my bed for me to jump into it. And I'm not going to do that. I don't want to do that. I like what I've accomplished today. And I incidentally don't have to wear all those old ugly clothes anymore. I can wear what I want. I can make a choice. And that's a big deal for me in my life. But I like the fact that I've taken this program into my daily life, that I use the steps every day. And someone said it earlier, I work a vigilant program. I don't screw around. I just don't want to do it that way anymore. I do what I'm supposed to do. I read the steps, the traditions, the books. I sponsor. I have sponsees all over the world, and I love it. It's so great to be able to talk to people who are new and who are vital and who really want this program. That's what I was meant to do. Also through this program, I was lucky enough to make a change in my career that kept me in the program. And that was very fortunate. I loved my work, but not enough not to retire. But I've been through marriage. I've been through divorce. I've been through deaths in the family. I've been married 10 years now to the love of my life. He's really my soulmate, and he's sick. He's ill. And I was saying earlier that I am learning something now that I never knew before. I'm learning how to live in the now. I live a day at a time. I do the best I can that day for myself and for whatever others are around me. And you know what? I go to bed at night with a clean, clear conscience. Never happened to the old person. I lived with a whole bunch of baggage that was infamous, I thought. I didn't like anything I did, anything, anywhere I went. I was not a nice person. I was a rager. I did awful things to my kids. My kids used to say, mothers never eat what's right, they only eat what's left. And that's the way it was. I ate from everybody's plate as I was cleaning up. I don't do that anymore. My garbage dispenser gets a lot of use, and my books get a lot of use, and you know what? So do I. Thank you very much.
Okay, we have a few questions from the audience. I'm just going to ask whoever wants to respond to come up and respond. How do you answer your normal eating family and friends? Why do you keep coming to OA since your weight is down? Anybody?
Okay. Because that's what I do.
For the first few years, I was very invested in them getting it, them understanding it, them agreeing with it, and them blessing it. And now, though the people that are important in my life pretty much do that now, what changed first was I had to let go of my expectation that they were going to like it or even understand it. For the first 10 years I was in OA, my dad would always, when I'd go over, he knew not to offer me food, a high caloric food on a visit. But he'd always bring out fruit because he figured all fat people are willing to eat fruit. It's healthy. But it took me about, I'm guessing, 10 years of implying, suggesting, and hinting that I don't eat between meals. And then one day it hit me to say to my dad that, Dad, I appreciate it and I love you, and I don't eat today between meals. I haven't for the last few years, and God willing, I'm not going to. So even the offer, as gracious as it is, it's just a perfunctory kind of, it's like a time filler. Do me a favor. I know you love me. I know you'd give me something if there was something I needed or wanted. Let's not go through this anymore. And you know what? He's never offered again. And I didn't do it in a controlling manner or in an abusive manner. I just got honest with him that it was beginning to be silly to go through that silly ritual, though he had good intent. They don't have to get it. They don't have to understand it. My wife used to say that she was diabetic to get people because she doesn't particularly go out of her way for sugar either. And it got people off her back. And I wasn't willing to go that route. And so I would just rather tell the truth and be honest about it. But I also, like I said, I had to, from an Al-Anon perspective, examine what was my investment in them liking me and blessing all these changes I was making.
How do you stay in contact with your higher power during your day-to-day busy life? Okay, how do I stay in contact with my higher power? Whenever I get upset about something, I think it's a second thought nowadays that says, you know, help me. And the short form of the serenity prayer is help. I learned that, and that really works. And I've really, the serenity prayer is the one thing, I think that's the most important to me, because I really had to work this separate segment. You know, there's nothing wrong today anymore that I don't have to accept everything. I can try to change things, and I have tried to change something a few days ago, and I was successful changing it. But I don't run with my head against the wall anymore. I use the third line, you know, accept the things I cannot change. Okay, God, you take it, and whatever will be. And it's worked pretty good because I can't change the world. I've tried long enough.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to, but all of these thoughts are coming to me now. Every great religion in the world has rituals around food. If I can make my own rituals around the food, I'm in constant touch with my higher power. And spiritual is a ritual. And that keeps me connected.
I am 3 weeks in OA. How do I determine my goal weight?
Well, I don't think that goal weight is politically correct anymore. It was certainly what we used when I came in 1983. Man, you set a goal weight and it was a target, and that's what you aimed for. Now I think we think more about what is a healthy weight. And probably most of us really intuitively know when we get to a weight that we're vigorous and energetic and healthy and, you know, not obsessing about food all the time. I think your personal physician or healthcare provider is a good resource. You know, what on this, you know, metropolitan life scale or whatever, you know, are you the high end, the low end, or that sort of thing. But I know for myself, I stayed about almost 15 pounds heavier than I am now, up until about, I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago. And it just didn't feel right. I was still, you know, really heavier than I cared to be. And with the help of program, I just, you know, put my mind to it and worked, you know, my program even harder, changed my food plan, and then, you know, lost those 15 pounds. So I don't think it's, I think you know it when you get there, okay? And then when you get there, you work with your sponsor to help stay there, okay?
The question is to, I guess, everybody, what food plan, what is your food plan? What are red foods? That's another question. I think it's a newcomer question. What are red foods?
Okay, what are red foods and what's my food plan? Okay, my plan of eating is what I use to maintain my abstinence. My abstinence is that I basically eat three meals a day with nothing in between. I have to weigh and measure what I eat because they say just eyeball it. My eyeball's broken, and I have no idea what a normal serving looks like. To me, an apple the size of a basketball is appropriate. So I weigh and measure what I eat, you know, and different people eat differently, and that can make some people crazy, but it saved my life. My abstinence is I stay away from dessert products. I pretty much know what I overate. And so it's like, I like this lady. She says, I don't eat any food that talks to me. And I have foods that talk to me. A good on that is if I want to eat a food every day at every meal, in fact, let's just make the whole meal, that one food. That's a good indication that that's probably one you shouldn't eat. Also, you know, different people have red light foods. Okay, that's basically things I abstain from. Okay, now my plan of eating doesn't include a lot of different things for health reasons and for whatever, but red foods, I guess, would be like, for me, would be like cupcakes. I know in no way, shape, or form that I should eat that food, and that if I do, you won't see me again. I'll be gone. Thanks.
I think we have time for one more. What do you do when the food or the disease calls? What tools do you use?
I've gotten a lot smarter in program. I pick up the phone. And that was something. That's how I got into all my binging before a program after diets, because, you know, I was done. I didn't feel good. Or something bothered me, so I had no choice but to eat it. And today, if things bother me, I'm a compulsive overeater now and always will be. All I do is I have a program and steps that I can work and tools. And I can pick up the phone, and my pride would never allow me to do that. So that kept me from, you know, working the program at one time. Today, I can pick up the phone and say, damn it, you know, the dozen donuts really talk to me. And then we both be usually the person, which usually is my sponsor, and I, we laugh about it. But at one time, it was all secretive. Secret, you know, the secret part of my life almost killed me. And today, I'm an open book, and I can talk about it. And I can talk about it sometimes if I choose a food that probably talks to me, and I can say, you know, I don't have to do that again if I don't want to.
I think that's all the time we have for questions. I'd like to thank our timer, Nancy, who volunteered the time. Thank you. And please join me in thanking our speakers for today. And now please stand and join hands and join me in the third step prayer.